Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. So welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Brandy Weber, and Brandy is one of the Trinity Foundation teachers. She's also a student of mine. And really in the last year or so, she's really kind of dived in deep with a lot of the work that the Trinity Foundation is doing. She's one of our teachers. She teaches at a recovery court, which is like one of the only programs that we do for the Trinity Foundation that is involved with courts. And it's actually been very successful. And so I'm really excited to have Brandy on the show. So Brandy, thank you for being on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's just give a little bit of background with regard to your story, and then we can talk about the Trinity Foundation and practice and all of that stuff. So where are you from?
So I live in South Dakota, and I've lived here my whole life. I have moved to the west side of the state and back to the east side of the state, and that's it. I live in a little town called Brookings, and actually I live a little outside of Brookings, which so I live in a little town called Aurora, and we have about 400 people here. So yeah, just a tiny little
400. That is crazy. Do you know everyone?
I don't know everyone. I spend most of my time in Brookings, but even Brookings itself is probably only around, I would say, maybe 17,000 people. So,
wow, that's crazy. And so is this closer to like Wyoming?
Nope. So I'm on the eastern side of the state right now, closer to the Minnesota side.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes more sense then.
Yes.
And so, do you have, but like, give me the setting. I love like, obviously I love my Montana. I spent a bunch of time there with Peg Mulquin.
Yes.
You know, when we did retreats and stuff, but I haven't been to South Dakota. What's the setting like? Is there mountains or what is?
So it depends on where you're at. The state really, it shouldn't be like North and South Dakota. It should be West and East. Okay. Absolutely different, different atmosphere and scenery. The west side of the state, which I am not on but was living in, is more mountainous, hills, lots of trails, hiking, all the fun touristy stuff, you know, Mount Rushmore, all those things. But on the eastern side of the state, it is prairie and farm country. So
really, what are they growing out there?
Corn and beans mostly. Okay.
So pretty exciting stuff.
Yes.
I'm assuming it's still beautiful. Is that part of the reason why you're still there?
Right. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's quiet. It's open prairie, grassland, the stuff that people, you know, dream about when they see like cowboy movies or things like that. That's what it looks like.
Awesome. Right. That's so great. And so you said you only moved basically from the east side to the west side of the state, or maybe vice versa. And so you went to school there?
Nope. So I did all my school here on the east side of the state. Went to South Dakota State University in Brookings. It was after college that I moved out. Absolutely beautiful, kind of a little hippie town, just right out in the hills. And I lived there for about 11 years and then moved back again here in the last, it would have been in 2013. So I've been back here for 6 years.
Awesome. That's great. And so tell me a little bit about Brandy back in those school years. Like, tell me just a little bit of background for the, you know, for the listeners to basically so that they can relate to you. Were you a cool kid? Were you a cool kid?
I was the furthest thing from the cool kid.
Furthest thing. Okay. All right.
Okay. I grew up in the country, living outside of the city limits.
Right.
Didn't have a whole lot around us. I'm an only child. I was pretty, I would say kind of geeky. I read a lot. and didn't have a whole lot of social interaction other than with my parents and adults. So very quiet, pretty nerdy. I was a book nerd.
Yeah.
That's probably the best description.
Okay. And so what other nerdy things did you do?
Not much, you know. I really lived inside of that world of like diving into books and kind of took solace in that and just was very quiet, shy. I didn't really do much for activities. I was very smart, you know, in advanced reading courses, things like that. But outside of that, I was just pretty awkward.
Yeah. Were you, did you feel isolated back then or?
Yeah. Outside of town and, you know, before I could drive or anything like that, I really didn't have a lot. You know, if you imagine your house being, you know, miles away from anybody else, I had my dog, you know, that's about it.
So you did, like you read a bunch of books, but I mean, was there other things that you did too? Like that were you found like as hobbies or whatever?
I really enjoyed things like I used to make jewelry or just, you know, little things that were all things to yourself. Things that I could do on my own. I used to like to draw a lot. Just things, yeah, that you can do solo without companionship, you know, no siblings or anything. So.
Right. Only child, like all by yourself, miles away from other people. I have never had that experience. So I can't even share it. I know that sometimes, like, you know, not too long ago, like I would go into the woods and like to a cabin and that would be like about as isolated as it'd get. Like me and Jess would go on like a little retreat or something like that and no one else would be around us, but still I don't really have the experience of having that every single day, which might be super peaceful, but I could also see where it would be like, you know, pretty daunting.
It's peaceful, but it's lonely. But now as an adult, I really, I just find comfort in quiet and being by myself. And I kind of crave that alone time too. So it's different, you know, then as you go on and have a family and everything, I still need my alone time. I really need it to function well.
Yeah. You consider yourself like an introvert?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. And so, so you went to school and what was the school called again?
South Dakota State University.
Okay.
And so one of the bigger schools here in South Dakota.
Yeah, that is a bigger school. So what was the, like, was there sticker shock with that? Was there like culture shock with that?
There really wasn't much for shock involved with it. I still, you know, I went to school and it was still right in Brookings. So I lived with my parents for the first 2 years. so not a whole lot for changes. I was hesitant to move into the dorms because I had been on my own. I'm kind of selfish, I would say, maybe, like, I don't want anyone touching my things. So yeah. I continued to live with my folks for the first couple years. And it was a big change for me. Just trying to get out there and talk to people and being in classes with, you know, hundreds of people. That was a big change for me.
Yeah, of course. And what did you study?
I studied a little bit of everything.
Did you graduate?
I did.
Okay.
But it took a lot of
usually
years.
People who say that are usually like, oh yeah, I studied a little bit of everything. And you're like, did you graduate? And they're like, no, I just dabbled in everything.
I really did dabble in everything. But I ended up like quitting for a while and then going back and finishing later. So, a little bit of everything. I started out in graphic design, changed to like political science. I was doing like philosophy for a while. I was kind of all over the place. So.
And what did you finally get your degree in?
I ended up with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, which basically is like create a major. Okay. When my advisor didn't know what to do with me anymore.
Wow.
Yeah. And I have a minor in German. So, you know, that's useful too.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to be in Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's still helpful, especially like if you're going to Europe, but that it's still funny that it's like, you know, out of all of the things that you could choose, it's like, you know, German and also a degree that is like very creatively yes, made up.
Very creative.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, after you got done with school, like, tell me what your life looked like.
Well, so there was kind of a pause in between there as to what happened. I actually finished my degree up after I had moved West River. So what had happened? Well, I was bartending my way through college. I found that really convenient for the hours and the money.
I mean, you make good money doing that for sure.
Yeah, I made really good money. It forced me to be social. So I was able to kind of come out of my shell, so to speak, a little bit. But that also was kind of the ruin of college and going downhill a little bit, drinking too much, staying up late, all that, you know, fun stuff that a lot of us are familiar with.
Sure.
And that is when I met my ex. And okay. We ended up moving out West River together, and I had quit college, didn't really tell anybody about it, and packed up and left. And then I put college and everything on quite a long pause for a long time.
because of a man, or because like you moved away, or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. I kind of put my life on hold, I guess.
Because you were supporting his dreams, or?
Yeah. Yeah. I just kind of picked up and moved for him. And then, in the middle of all the things that I was trying to accomplish. So that was,
sure.
That was a big move for me.
Yeah, of course. I mean, also like, you know, going from like feeling like, you know, you're isolated, like you said in the beginning, to like, you know, getting out there, and then all of a sudden it's like, you're, you know, in a relationship in another city, like stop your school. Like, I could see why that's a, you know, a major event. So tell me a little bit about like Spearfish and how long you lived out in Spearfish.
Okay. So I was out there for about roughly 11 years. And it's an even smaller town than Brookings, but more touristy. So, okay. So there's a few more people kind of moving in and out. I really like when I got there, it was just, very shocking to the system to be away from my parents.
Is that what you struggled with the most?
I would say that initially that was really, really hard for me. Just growing up and being so close with them. And then I was 6.5 hours away. So that, I mean, they're kind of my lifeline.
Of course.
That was really, really tough on me. Work there, the job market is not great. So I was just kind of struggling to find whatever work I could. And I ended up in a great position that kind of fit my personality. It was just this little like kind of hippie shop, that had kind of that like Indian vibe and jewelry and books and clothing. And I ended up managing that little store for quite a while. So that helped me just kind of situate a little bit.
I mean, that's better than bartending.
Yeah. Well, I was also bartending.
Okay. All right. Well, there's that.
I was also bartending.
Trying to make ends meet.
If you are familiar with the Sturgis bike rally at all, if you've ever heard that come up, that's a big deal out there. So I was bartending, and that was a really good chance, an opportunity to make money. I did that for a lot of years as well.
Gotcha. And so I know a little bit about your story. So like, you know, where did, you know, like addiction and boyfriend and all of that kind of mesh together and like, you know, kind of, get you to a different place?
Right. So this is the tough stuff.
This is the tough stuff. Sorry, I gotta ask it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, part of it, and just to kind of give you a little bit of pause, you know, part of it is the reason why we're sharing stuff that is obviously vulnerable is because it gives strength to another person that is dealing with it. And like, you know, the stuff that I've heard from your story is quite powerful. And so, you know, like, how did you kind of get into that situation, and then tell us how you got out of it?
Right. I think that's probably the better side of it. but I will start with just a little of the background.
Sure.
So, you know, when I picked up and moved, we were already kind of deep into, whatever that was, this very like obsessive, relationship that was already quite controlling. I mean, I did pick up and move with him, but I can't say that it was totally on my terms, I guess. You know, once we were there, I thought maybe things, you know, as we all do, we're very optimistic and then hope that things will be better. He drank a lot.
And were you drinking too?
Brandy? I was drinking a lot. You know, that kind of came with the territory and bartending, and, you know, that's how we met. So, just kind of this party scene. But he was pretty heavily into drugs as well. I think people thought that I liked to do that, or maybe, that sounds really odd, but, you know, I apparently look the part, that whatever that means. People thought I was a druggie, you know, whatever that means.
Yeah. I don't know what that means either, but I mean, does that bother you?
It doesn't bother me now, but it did then. And
you did work at a hippie store.
I did. And I think that's part of the, you know, I mean, I was kind of weird, and I liked the Doors and the, you know, things like right. that. So of course, you know, I think people just had this like conception of what they thought of who I was. And so I kind of had to fit that part, right, too. So yeah, I, you know, was using drugs on occasion with him. It was something, I mean, I honestly have to say, it was something I never really cared for. I
didn't either though, but right. I couldn't stop.
Right. So yeah. I was lucky that way, that, you know, it was something I really never actually liked. I very much would rather, I like to feel in control. And I think that's a lot of like anxiety related things. So for me, I never felt comfortable doing those things, but I did those things because I wanted to fit in.
Gotcha.
I drank a lot more because that made me feel like I could talk to people, or, you know, things like that. But I never actually really enjoyed that much either. I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, you know, I'm going to go have a craft beer and enjoy it. Or, you know, I really honestly never liked those things. It was just, you know, something that I felt like I kind of had to do.
I've never had a craft beer, just as a side note. I've been sober too long, you know.
It wasn't a thing then.
It was not a thing. We were drinking Natty Light and Budweiser and stuff that right. is just terrible.
Yeah, terrible.
Now everyone's drinking like the champagne of beers, right. and I'm over here drinking Natty Light.
Exactly. You know? No, people enjoy it now, and that's okay. You know, you sip this beer and you like the taste or whatever, but I've never been somebody that really enjoyed it. It was something to do, and it was something that made me feel not so awkward around people. And so I just did it. But, you know, with my ex, it was always like to the extreme. And, you know, then we did get to a point where, you know, I think unless I did those things, you know, I wasn't fun for him. Or, so then I felt compelled to do it, because otherwise he didn't find me fun or whatever that is.
Yeah. I mean, did you end up kind of like losing yourself a bit?
I did. when I
mean, did you feel the losing of yourself? As I mean, was that part of the thing that you were experiencing?
For sure. You know, I'd always drink to excess. You know, I'm not a very big person. And I never really had a good control of how much I could drink or what was appropriate for my size. And then, you know, as things really deteriorated in that relationship and, it got more controlling, became incredibly abusive.
Then when I would, I mean, you're talking about verbally or emotionally or physically or all, wow, that had to be very difficult.
It was really, really difficult. And, as things really, really got worse, then I would drink more, when I did have the opportunity to,
But did you have a problem with alcohol, you think, Brandy, or no?
I don't know what's a problem. You know, I wouldn't say that I had a problem like other people that I know that are in recovery, but I did have a problem in using it responsibly, making myself sick, and you know, I had some health issues and would get low blood sugar and then I would pass out. And, so I guess I would say it was a problem.
Right.
But
like go ahead. Sorry.
I'm just going to say, I never really cared for it. So then in my mind, I guess maybe that's the story I tell myself, is that it wasn't really a problem because I wasn't addicted. Right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there is such thing as like problem drinkers for sure. And like the problem drinkers can put a drink down, or put the drink down when they think enough is enough or whatever. Like, but that's not an alcoholic. An alcoholic basically has like a compulsion that they can't stop.
Right.
And so that sounds like maybe a problem drinker, but not an alcoholic, right, like myself. And so let's, you know, you mentioned physical abuse and emotional abuse. Like, tell me what the worst of it looked like.
I would say the worst of it was really the mental, and emotional aspect of it, because that's where it really gets you. You know, some physical abuse, like those bruises will go away relatively quickly. But it was the control of how I had to, control my words, in order not to set him off.
Right.
And just kind of tiptoeing around.
That's like living in your own little personal hell.
I lived inside of a prison in our home.
How long of a period was this, Brandy?
I was with him on and off for about 10 years. So, you know, people always ask the question, you know, well, if it was so bad, why didn't you leave?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of reasons. You're scared. And
yeah, I mean, afraid of getting, you know, hurt or, right, you know,
he would always, you know, tell me that if I left him, he was going to kill himself. Or, you know, the other threat would be, if that wasn't it, then, you know, if you leave me, I will make your life miserable.
Yeah, and, which both are sick in their own ways.
Right. So it took me a lot of times I think it was maybe around like the sixth time that I left for good.
Yeah, because enough was enough.
I didn't leave that situation for myself. I finally got the courage to leave and left when my daughter was about 3 years old. So.
And this is her dad.
Yes.
Gotcha.
You know, it got to a point where I didn't want her to be around it anymore, to see those things happening. So. The courage was all to like get her out of that that situation. So when I talked about it, I don't know, like, if I had not have had my daughter, you know, would I still be there? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, how scared were you that he was going to hurt you or make your life a living hell or whatever?
I was terrified. Because, you know, obviously you want to like help this person. I mean, there was this sick level of codependency, you know, where I thought I could fix him or help him. But that just wasn't, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, he still does not feel like he has a problem. He doesn't think that, he needs anger management. He doesn't think that he has a problem in any way. So, you know, me staying there trying to fix something that's not even acknowledged.
It's
absolutely impossible. So obviously he didn't kill himself when I left. But he did hold true on that promise of that he would make my life miserable.
What happened?
That first year that I left was probably the worst of my life. Just living in constant state of fear, threats. He was driving past the house, fighting for custody of our daughter, which, you know, honestly, that has never been a concern for him. She's not a priority for him. He uses her as that tool on a way that he can still control me. Because that's the one piece he has left, like where he, right, what he can do to hurt me. And, you know, just messy legal battles and constant, you know, harassment and thousands of dollars in attorney fees and, you know, it just made my life hell, which is what he said he would do.
Well, I mean, it obviously sounds heartbreaking and unfortunately, like, I've heard too many of these stories, especially connected to, you know, addiction and all of that stuff where the person is, you know, unwilling to get help and, you know, the person that was trying to help them becomes a victim of their insanity, basically. Right. I've heard it way too many times. It actually, you know, to a certain level, it pisses me off. And then the other level, like, I have compassion because obviously, like, you know, those type of people are living in their disease and they don't know. Right. They don't know.
Yeah. I still have compassion for him.
That's a strong person. You're a strong person, Brandy.
You know, I just, for a long time, I kind of spiraled in that, like, you know, I hated him, or, you know, you like wish these bad things upon somebody because they're hurting you. And, you know, that doesn't do me any favors. And, I know he's hurting. I know he is. And the things that he does and the things that he says, he's sick. He is sick. So I still try to have that compassion for him. And, you know, obviously we have a child together. But I also have to, you know, I've never been really good with boundaries. So that's something that I'm working on. And I can't let the way that he treats me dictate how I treat him. I refuse to stoop to that level.
But that's amazing. Cause that takes a huge amount of, like, I mean, that is like what the Buddha talks about. That is what compassion is. That is what everything is, you know, like, obviously, you know, some of the people know, like, in my community that I've been harassed for a really long time, by, you know, several students and like, I have compassion for them,
yeah,
you know, and it's a very difficult thing to do and a hard space to hold, but to not get sucked into the drama that gets played out and all of that stuff it's important for my emotional well-being, and it also makes me keep my side of the street clean, right. Which I think is very important. And that's exactly what you're describing, which is, I mean, amazing. I mean, that sounds like you've done a huge amount of work to get to that point.
Yeah, it wasn't always like that, for sure. Yeah. And I still, the things I really, you know, need to work on is that initial response, you know, in those moments, it's not as easy as I'm making it sound right now. I have a definite physical response to, you know, when we still are having contact.
That's trauma.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
It's, yeah. You know, heart racing, hands shaking, try to take a breath.
Yeah.
So
I understand. Been there before. Right. I've been there before. So let me tell you, or let me ask you, like, when did the yoga come in?
Not soon enough. and I know everybody can say that, and we wish that we would have started sooner. But I mean, honestly, I had always kind of had this, like, you know, dabble or interest in yoga, you know, that kind of hippie type, like I referred to earlier. I had played around with it a little bit. Actually, you know, when I was in Spearfish living with my ex, and had gone to yoga a few times, after I had gone a little bit, he no longer allowed me to go. I think he saw that it kind of brought a happiness or a change in me. So he kind of stopped that. Once I moved back to Brookings, I settled in for about a year, was trying to kind of get adjusted. And then I did find a yoga studio that I started going to. So I would say probably right around 2015 was when I really started getting serious about yoga.
Yeah. And was it, I did it once you got serious, was it daily?
I wouldn't say it was super serious until I found Ashtanga. I was still kind of just playing around with it. I mean, and I was going, I would say maybe every other day or something like that.
What style were you doing?
I started out with vinyasa.
Okay.
So
I forgive you.
I know, right?
I'm just kidding.
You know, it was bringing me a sort of piece, and I was finding things in it that, you know, were making me feel a little bit more confident, or, you know, things like that. But it wasn't until I really was diving into Ashtanga where all those pieces started to come together, where it was still a little more like just on the physical aspect when I was doing vinyasa.
Yeah. And so tell me what your first experience was with Ashtanga.
So I had signed up and registered to do teacher training, a vinyasa flow teacher training. Had no idea what I was getting into, realized like how little I actually knew about anything regarding yoga. and just had wanted to improve my own personal practice, really had no desire to teach or anything. And then my two teachers that were teaching the teacher training, my teacher Jen, she had dabbled with Ashtanga for a while. She went to Goa, was pretty serious about her Ashtanga practice for a while, but had kind of fallen out of it. And her co-teacher Chris, he had practiced with her for quite some time. So we spent just one weekend in our 200-hour training, talking about Ashtanga, and they led me through primary series. I loved it.
Awesome.
Everyone else hated it.
Yeah, that's a pretty common response. It's like 1 out of 20,
right?
1 out of 10. Yeah. It's hard,
yeah,
you know? I mean, it's a hard practice, bringing you straight face to face with, like, I don't know, reality,
yes,
the present moment. Yeah.
It took me into this, you know, whatever we can, you know, say these cliche things, but it took me deeper in than
right.
I had gone before. And it just made me feel really powerful, which is something that I'm not used to feeling. Right. So it was very intriguing for me right from that moment. I knew I had to know more about it.
And so what did you do after that point? Did you start practicing it consistently, or did you, go to it whenever you could, or
right
what?
From that weekend, I really just kind of dove into everything I could. I asked Jen for more resources, and, she kind of gave me those channels to go to online as far, looking at like some keynote videos, things like this,
Sure. I mean, everyone starts at keynote videos.
Right. Everybody starts at keynote. she, kind of led me in the, pushed me in the right direction, but really couldn't give me a whole lot, she lived in Sioux Falls, and that's about an hour away from me. So I really just had to kind of look things up on my own. And as you know, in South Dakota, there's really not, there's nothing for Ashtanga. There's really not a whole lot else other than corn and beans.
Right?
So, I was left to my own devices to kind of figure all of this out. In the meantime, Jen, I don't know how she had really discovered you or your book or anything, but she happened to have your book and she passed it along to me. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And is that what brought you to the forum, the Trinity Foundation Forum?
Well, so I don't know. Everybody always asks me this question. They're like, how in the heck did you start practicing with Taylor? if you're in South Dakota. I got in my head a lot about, like, I really didn't think that seeking you out was realistic for me. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things where I'm like, okay, I'm in South Dakota. I'm, thousands of miles away. So I actually had started, I read your book, really connected with it, thought it was wonderful. And then it was like, okay, this is totally not practical. So I started, trying to look around the surrounding area for any resources and trying to find, any teacher that might be a little bit closer or whatever. And was just not feeling it. It was one of those things where it was just like, hey, this part isn't for me. And I'm like, I was feeling that draw like towards you. And I'm like, I got to check this out. So I can't just toss it aside, because I feel like it's not practical or whatever.
Right.
I sent you a message.
Yeah. That's freaking awesome.
Yeah. the thing that for me was very important was, recently you talked about finding or choosing a teacher that sees you. And, here I am, this little gal from South Dakota, and scared and, quiet and withdrawn. And when I walked in at AYC, you saw me.
Yeah.
So that made that, it sealed the deal for me that I had made a good decision in traveling all the way to Columbus to come see you. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, it was an amazing week, and, I didn't actually know any of that backstory. So that's the first time I heard it. And, the other thing too is I think that from a distance, you can still feel the support of like the recovery and like people trying to get healthy and people working through their stuff. And maybe that was part of the draw too.
Absolutely. You have an amazing community. So even though I'm far away, it's like I'm not really far away, which sounds super cheesy, but it very truthful that, I feel like I still have support, even though I don't have anybody right here with me. So,
yeah. Yeah. And, obviously we have online forums and stuff like that, that have been very helpful to obviously keep people like you tied in. You're right. More than welcome to move here. we'd have you here in Columbus.
It ever pans out for me to do so.
Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about what happened after the Ashtanga and Addiction Forum.
All right. Yes. Yeah. So that was a game changer for me.
The forum or what happened next?
Just the forum itself. And I mean, I had been practicing at home and kind of trying to teach myself everything that I possibly could. And, you know, after meeting you, and again, it just kind of comes back to that traditional aspect of the practice and, you know, having a teacher that can direct you a little bit or, you know, give you some guidance. Cause I really came in without any kind of guidance at all. That just opened up a lot of doors for me, in figuring things out. And I mean, from then on, it was like, absolutely, this is what I'm doing. And you know, I had a 6 day a week practice, since then. So,
wow. I mean, and it was one of the most moving groups that I've ever had. Like, I mean, it was an emotional week there. And it was, I mean, it was intense, and like people were working out their stuff. There was plenty of addicts and people like yourself that have dealt with addicts before. I mean, it was a really powerful week.
Yes.
And a lot of the people actually became teachers after that, you know, right. Like they were teaching in treatment centers. It was freaking awesome. Yes. You know? So talk a little bit about the drug court and how like, you play that role, with the Trinity Foundation.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. It's, I would say, one of my favorite parts of my week. So such a rewarding thing to be doing. And so I kind of, again, this is something that just kind of fell into my lap. You know, when initially I had started kind of talking to you about it, I hadn't done the Trini Forum yet. I'd had somebody kind of pull me in and just was talking about, hey, you should come sit in on the, you know, this drug court. And, I think this would be good for you to see if you can't get involved. Cause it was something that really was interesting to me that I wanted to do, reached out to you, talked about the forum a little bit. Right. I didn't know if I was going to be able to make it happen. Like financially, the forum was like just a couple weeks out or whatever. And I made it happen. So yeah. I just made it happen. And then once I got back here, it was just a matter of setting things up. And, you know, this program is a lot different than, you know, a lot of the other ones that you're doing. Like you said,
right.
You're within treatment centers, things like that. So where, you know, Trini can come in and it's a mandatory program, what I'm doing is, you know, teaching this class and it's on a voluntary basis. Like, they gotta want to show up. So
gotta be hard.
Yeah. They're, you know, basically work in an outpatient program and, you know, they have the option of coming to see me once a week if they choose to do so. So that's been, I mean, it hasn't been easy, but I do have a pretty dedicated crew now that keeps coming
awesome.
Back.
Yeah, that's freaking amazing. I mean, we're trying to do more stuff with, you know, drug courts.
It's such an amazing program, like truly, to see, I think, you know, I really didn't even know that it existed until one of my friends told me about it. And then, you know, when I went in, I was really very naive. You go in with that mindset of like, okay, I'm walking into this courtroom.
Right.
I don't know who these people are going to be or whatever. And I walked in and I had like graduated with half of them.
Wow.
It blew my mind. And
yeah, just the conversations that we've had about it, it seems like, you know, that it would be very inspiring. And, you know, obviously I think you're the perfect person to hold that space for them too.
Well, thank you. Yeah. That's a compliment from you.
Yeah. Well, so tell me, you know, like hearing all of your backstory and hearing all of this awesome stuff that has happened in your life over the last, like, you know, couple of years or whatever. I mean, tell me why you practice today, you know, like, has it changed or, you know, like what's the big why of like why you show up on your mat?
Practice for me is, I mean, quite frankly, it's like a therapy of sorts. It's me being able to, I'm starting to remember who I used to be.
Yeah.
if that makes sense.
It makes 100% sense.
I had completely lost myself for all those years. And so, like I say, I'm starting to remember. I'm definitely not there yet, but every day that I step on my mat, I feel like I get a little bit closer. The anxiety, things like that, for me, it's like, that's that drive to get on my mat every single day, because it makes me feel better. So I don't really have to think about the motivation part of it. It's, I need to do it, to feel okay. And, you know, before Ashtanga, you can look back and think of, like, you know, I didn't eat, I didn't sleep. I would be so, like, racked with nerves. And, now I sleep really good at night, because it's exhausting for one. You know, I'm working those things out. And
right.
So that is the driving factor. I always keep in mind, there is something that you said that always stands out to me, that, you know, practices if your life depends on it. And that's how I practice. Cause I feel like I truly am. I'm better when I practice.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, I want to obviously give appreciation for you being on the show. Like, obviously, you know, a lot of that stuff was new stuff, things that I hadn't heard. But I'm grateful that I'm part of the journey of you finding yourself again. And I think it's, like, pretty powerful that you're able to come on here and, like, share that side and understand, like, what you're trying to do, and, like, understand your why. You're an important part of this community, and I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Taylor. Grateful for you.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.